Thank you for joining me for episode 7 of Marooned, a Texas Tiki podcast. My guest this week is one of my oldest friends in the world and the drummer of my band, The Phantomatics, Joe Ortiz. Besides my girlfriend, Jen, I think Joe is probably the first person to have listened to Marooned. And having known each other for over 10 years now, I kind of trust his judgment. So when he told me how much he enjoyed the first episode, I thought maybe I'm onto something. As a self-proclaimed tiki virgin, we thought it'd be fun to talk tiki, surf music, and even black metal while having Joe try some new cocktails for the first time. This week's episode is sponsored by Bamboo on the Bayou, Houston, Texas's premier tiki event. This week's cocktails are the Shark's Tooth and Three Dots and a Dash. As always, if you'd like to drink along, fire up the Total Tiki app, shake up a cocktail, sit back, relax, and enjoy episode number 7 of Marooned, a Texas Tiki podcast.
Well, you invited me over here. What are you telling me about?
What the hell? I invited you to your own apartment?
Yeah.
All right.
You invited me out here?
Hey, turn that off. What's the matter with you?
If you'd like to watch any YouTube videos, the couch and study are free. They are open for perusing.
Please don't interrupt. This is very important business. Well, what is this that we're drinking? Shark tooth?
That is a shark's tooth, yes. Yeah, that's like pretty good. Pineapple's a little strong, but it's not bad.
You know, being born in Mexico and raised in Texas, I know how to drink. I've always been a little hesitant with, like, really fruity drinks. Because they're usually, like, too sweet. And then you drink two or three, and you're like, oh, like, you get a... In Spanish, it's called empalagado. Like, it's too sweet. But this is, like, a good mixture. You can still taste the alcohol.
Yeah.
I don't think the pineapple is too strong. But it is balanced, yeah. You can taste everything. I like that.
Cool. Good. Glad you enjoy it.
Because there's nights where you just want to take shots, and then you get all hammered, and you don't taste anything there or remember anything, and you end up punching a quinceañera. And there's nights where you kind of like want to hang out, and maybe have a corn dog, eat a fruity drink. So yeah, I like it.
Good.
It's pretty good.
I'm glad you like your fruity drink.
What's in this?
That is pineapple juice, lime juice, Bacardi 8, which is actually really rad. That's the only Bacardi we'll keep in the house. Then some syrup from maraschino cherries. Mm. Good cherries. Luxardo's. Those are dope cherries. And then you throw some Caruba on top.
I don't know what any of that stuff is, but I like it. Bacardi 8 is a rum, I'm assuming?
Yeah, Bacardi 8 is a gold Barbados-style rum. Caruba's a dark Jamaican rum.
8, is that because it's 8 years old? Mm-hmm. Is that a stupid question?
No, it's because, it's aged 8 years.
Interesting.
But yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I like it. It's good. So, what's up with the tiki drink things? Like, how did this get started? Well, what's the deal?
I don't know. I don't know. It's like the whole surf thing, I think, prompted getting in. It's like how I got into surf. I started listening to Rockabilly, got really into Brian Setzer, Reverend Horton Heat, started listening to more music that influenced similar stuff, found surf. From surf, started listening to all sorts of crazy instrumental shit. Found Exotica music, which is what we were just listening to. Martin Denny. Just crazy, crazy jungle sounds. And yeah, and that leads into drinks and drinking. And
you know, every time I go to like a Half Price Books or to a record store, I'll see an Exotica record. And I think of the time that one of you girls called it Erotica. I don't remember which one of you it was, but anyway.
It's that motherfucker, because she still says it every time.
I'll just pick them up because they're usually like pretty cheap.
Yeah.
And the covers are really cool. But sometimes I pick one up and I listen to it and it doesn't sound anything like what we were just listening to. It's like a almost like an orchestra or like string instruments. And I'm like, this isn't at all what it, but it was 50 cents. So it's like, it's a hit or miss. But now I have a stack of those that it's like, I got to go through and listen to. But the covers are super cool. They're always like really interesting.
It's the sort of thing like in the 50s and 60s, I think it was mostly a cash grab. People would do orchestral mixes and stringed quartets, instrumental stuff, and they'd call it Exotica because they're just trying to get in on the trend of the time.
I've even seen some, like, it'll say like Spanish guitars. So I'm thinking it's going to be like Spanish guitars, like classical nylon string. No, and it's like an orchestra playing like a Herb Albert song or something. I'm like, this isn't at all what I thought it was going to be. But again, it's 50 Cent, so
yeah,
whatever.
Nothing wrong with the Tijuana Brass.
I guess, but when you hear it 1,000 times, it's like, all right, I'm done with this.
You can only hear Spanish Fleas so many times.
And I also freak out when I see a Chuck Mangione record, because it's like King of the Hill. Like, right away, I think King of the Hill in that one episode where he was sleeping inside of the Megalomart. I love that episode. But going back to what you were saying about the surf and the tiki, that's kind of how I associated when you first brought the tiki drinks up, because it kind of fits into that whole lifestyle. And one thing I really enjoyed about, because I wasn't into surf music, obviously, until you showed it to me. And even the rockabilly scene, even though I enjoyed the fashion and the music and the cars, I've never felt like I was part of that scene, because I don't have a hot rod. I don't have hair anymore. And so I've never really fit into it stylistic-wise. But as far as the music and the people that are in that scene, it's very unique, because everybody's very inviting. Everyone wants to show you something about that lifestyle, whether it be a drink or a song or a car, without being snobby about it. Like, you get a lot of other genres or lifestyles of music, and it can be kind of snobby, like metalheads. Like, metalheads want to out-metal you at every and I'm guilty of that. Like, if someone's like, oh yeah, I like, you know, Lamb of God, I'm like, that's for babies. Like, listen to something like that's real heavy, you know. So this lifestyle, the rockabilly tiki surf thing, I think is very cool, very welcoming, very different than it. And even though the music, if you listen to 10 surf tracks without knowing what they are, 8 of the 10 are probably going to sound exactly the same.
You're going to think it's been one long
song. Yeah, to an untrained ear or to someone who's not familiar with it, you can listen to our whole set sometimes and it's like they've been playing the same song over and over again. But I think the people who are really into it are really passionate about it and can tell the difference. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And we're sitting here with Joe Ortiz, the drummer of the Fantomatics. Probably should have mentioned that a little while ago.
They know who I am.
Oh, excuse me. You guys know.
They know. They already know.
Pardon me. Thanks for coming over, doing an episode of the podcast. We'll call this the Fantomatics episode.
Okay.
So,
half of the Fantomatics, or 2/3 of the Fantomatics, are here.
Yeah, that's all right.
Do you remember the first time we practiced?
The first time we practiced, mm-hmm. Was that at Jeremy's condo, or was that in the practice?
No, it was at the practice room.
The back room.
Yeah, it was the original practice room. We stopped and got stuff from Jeremy's house first. It was like a Frankenstein drum set.
Yeah.
It was made of like random drum sets. And we went over there and I sat in and I just listened to y'all play. I don't even remember what songs they were that we were playing at the time, but I think I watched y'all for like 40 minutes. And I was like, yeah, I can do that. And then we booked a gig like a month later.
No, it was maybe a few months later. No, it was literally like a year later.
It wasn't that long. Yes, I don't think so, dude.
I swear to you. So the band started in late September, early October of 2008.
Sheesh.
And our first gig was not till 2009, Zombie Walk.
No. Yes. No, it wasn't, guy. No. Oh, no. It was at that festival in Del Rio.
That was our first show ever. First show in San Antonio. So it was like 6 months
later. Yeah. Which we were not ready for, like, at all.
At all. We were writing songs up until, like, the day before.
I think we were practicing one song the night before. I think we got together at your house and played it.
Yeah.
But it was a good time. It was fun.
That's funny.
Almost 10 years ago.
Was it Southwest Fest?
I think it was Southwest Fest, yeah.
Man, that's a throwback.
That is a throwback.
But, it's going on 10 years since we started the band. That blows my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, we're not as active as we once were, and it is kind of a relief, because when we started gigging, we were playing at least 3 times a month.
There was a night we played twice in one night.
Yeah.
That was a mistake.
Yeah, it's all right. We're still alive.
Well, the second show, I was like, I'm tired. It was like 11 o'clock, and I'm like, I just want tacos.
Yeah.
I'm done with this.
But we survived. It was at the Mineshaft, so it was all right.
Those shows are probably like some of the best ones we had, though. Mineshaft shows were great.
Not like anybody was there.
There was like 13 people there.
Or the night we played with Jungle Rockers. That was super cool.
Yeah. That was at the Mineshaft. Yeah, that was good. What are the guys up to? Are they still playing?
They had stopped playing for a while. They started doing shows over the summer. They were playing every Tuesday in Austin. They were doing like a Jungle Rockers night. I wanted to go the night of my birthday, but we just didn't make it out there. But yeah, no, it's super cool. I remember when Jeremy and I first started talking about doing the band, he's like, yeah, I talked to Joe. Joe said he wants to do it. I'm like,
yo, who's Joe? Joe
play drums. Like,
I still don't play drums.
But you somehow managed it, and yeah, here we are 10 years later.
I've always been into music. I've never been the most talented musician. I started playing guitar, and I'm not very good at it. But I really enjoyed it, and this type of music just seemed like it was fun. Again, going back to the metal thing, metalheads, you can't just sit in with a metal band and start playing drums. You can't do that. First, it probably wouldn't be much fun. Or like a jazz, you can't go and sit in with a jazz band or anything like that. And this music just seemed like it'd be fun to play. And I appreciate y'all's patience with me in the beginning too, and even now.
Well, that's why we didn't do our first gig here and at home for a year. Like, let's get him to learn how to play drums first. Then we'll...
And I'll get there one day. I'll learn how to play eventually. Another 10 years, maybe.
But yeah, like I said, we're not as active as we once were. And that's all right. We're all, I mean, shit, we're both in our 30s now. Dude, think about it. We were, what? I was 22.
I must have been 22 or 23 when we started.
When we started the band. Like, that's crazy. That blows my mind.
Yeah.
Blows my mind that we've known each other this long to begin with.
It doesn't seem like it was that long ago.
11 years.
Yeah, that we were like hanging
out at Guitar Center.
Yeah, going for drinks after work. I tell people all the time that working there was probably my favorite job that I've had. The job itself sucked, but being around so many musicians as coworkers and then meeting all the people that would come in, some were assholes, but some were pretty cool.
There were so many Emilios, Chucks, and Mansoors.
And see, dude, Emilio is my jukebox hero, man. I love that guy. He was so happy about the music he was making, even though there were covers. I remember going to watch him at some dive bar once before I was 21. And we just walked in. It was like that shitty of a bar that like they just let anybody in. And we got plastered. And he was like playing some song. And the song was done. And like his band members took a break. And he was still playing guitar but there by himself. And he had just bought some new pedal or something. And he was like, check it out, dude. I can make it sound like a motorcycle revving up. And so he just like boom hit a chord and he was like like messing with the delay. I was like, yeah, that sounds like a motorcycle. I've also had like super 8 cool drinks though. So anything sounds like a motorcycle right now. But just being around those guys, you got to learn a lot about the scene that's very unique to San Antonio. Like everyone kind of knows everybody. And
oh, and Fern. And
Fern, yeah.
Fern, full-blooded Yaqui Indian.
They don't know who they're messing with. He was cool. Yeah, I loved him. I loved Julian. Learned a lot from those guys.
Yeah. I always forget about Julian because he just peaced out.
Well, he could be in the room and you might not even notice him.
That is true.
But yeah, he was cool. He was a great guitar player too.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he still is.
That was such a... It was such a bad job because we didn't make any money. But we were also in our early 20s, so it didn't really fucking matter anyway. It's just fun hanging out and dicking around for... It wasn't even 8 hours a day. You'd
and I would
like
complain if I was
seven.
Like, I'm like, dude, I've been here 8 hours. That's enough.
Yeah.
It's like, that's enough. I've had enough of this place. It's like, I almost hit 40 hours this week. That's too much. And yeah, now I'm almost
working full time.
This is ridiculous. Bullshit. I didn't sign up for this. I have Maury to watch at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I'm like, 10 hours. Damn it. I've been here 10 hours already.
Yeah.
No, those were good times, though.
Yeah. Great times. I will always remember those times fondly, but yeah, I mean, you can only do so much when you're getting paid fucking $7 an hour and then spending most of it that same night getting hammered.
A lot of times it was like, do I get a 6-pack of beer or do I put gas in my car? And I was like, well,
I'll get 3 beers.
Get a holiday 3-pack and then put $3 of gas in my car.
Yeah, exactly.
It was all right. It is what it is. You're young. And I wish you could have been there when it was Hermes because that was a lot of fun. A lot more relaxed. And like our inventories, just to show you a dynamic of the way the different companies were, we'd have inventory at Hermes. We'd be done in like half a day, maybe. And the rest of the time, we'd be there and just jamming out. Like everybody would get a guitar or some drums or whatever. And everybody, all the jukebox heroes there would play all their music. And then Guitar Center's inventory was like beep, 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 like just scanning everything. And like everybody hated being there. And we'd be there till like midnight. It's like, this sucks. There's no fun in here.
Yeah, that's why that company's gone down.
Yeah. Well, they're open. They're still opening places, so.
I don't know why or how. But yeah, you go in there now and it's so many different faces in there. It's just crazy.
Well, I went in there just recently and I only go in there to look at the used stuff. Because anything else I can get online.
Yeah. A lot cheaper.
And it's cheaper, yeah. And I don't have to go anywhere. But I like going to look at the used stuff. And even the used stuff has gone down. Like, I look at used symbols and it's like the same three or four symbols. And they're trash. And I go look at the used basses or guitars and it's like, there's nothing good here. I do like going to talk to some of the guys that are still there. And that's pretty much it. There's nothing else there for me. And then you get like the 18-year-old jackass that's playing drums and there's nobody in the drum department. So, yeah, it's the same everywhere, I'm sure. Every Guitar Center is the same. I did go to one in Oklahoma once and I bought a snare drum there because it was used. And the guy would not shut up about his band. The sales guy. He's like, you gotta come check out my band. We're like an Avenged Sevenfold meets like hold on, I'm not done. It's like an Avenged Sevenfold, like Linkin Park. And I was like, yeah. I was like, well, I'm not from here, and I'm literally leaving like in 2 hours. And he's like, well, dude, you can check us out on Facebook or whatever. I met a guy in Charlotte at the Guitar Center over there, and we started talking about music, and he started talking about hip hop, and he was actually pretty knowledgeable on hip hop. He's like, you know, do this, blah, blah, blah. And I told him, oh, okay, that's cool. I was like, I'm in a band back home. This is what we do.
He's like, yeah, no, I don't give a shit about that.
No. He was, like, excited about it. And he's like, all right, I'm going to add you on Instagram. Oh, no, he said, I'm going to add you on the gram. I was like, all right, I'm done with you. All right, I'm done with you. Don't add me. No, but if you're out there, thanks for adding us on Instagram.
I probably got it one day. I'm like,
you did, yeah. You had, yeah, because he did it there in front of me at the store. Like,
I'm probably like,
he's a cool guy. He's just I don't know if it's because I'm older or because that inner snob in me comes out, or I there's certain people that I want to hear from that I respect their opinions on music, or that they're bringing something interesting and different, no matter what kind of music it is, hip-hop, country, whatever kind of music it is, as long as it's unique or they're making an effort to make something different, cool, I respect that. But when you start saying, like, we sound like Avenged Sevenfold and Linkin Park, it's like you're not doing anything that's going to interest me.
Yeah. Well, when you name those two bands, of course, but yeah. You're not contributing anything new. You're just rehashing what I'm sure they've done.
Pete and I were recently talking about, as I drop my straw, we were recently talking about how there's some pop music now that has really good producing, and some of the sounds are very interesting on what they're doing. But it's not music, it's like entertainment. They're manufacturing these songs to get hits, to get streams or whatever. So it's like a non-music. You can still be entertained by it, and some of it's still pretty good, but it's like on a whole category on its own. It's not music. There's no musicianship. It's like one really good producer making music, and they're just throwing someone's vocals on it. So, I mean, it is what it is. That's the way the industry is now.
Hey, somebody's buying it.
Somebody's buying. Are they though? Are they like? Are people buying it? Because now there's people getting plaques and awards for streams. Like there's no money being made other than royalties from streaming websites.
Yeah.
So are people buying it? Like I don't see a lot of people going out and buying a Katy Perry record.
They might be. Or like they might be.
Or Cardi B. Like no one's going out there to Best Buy and be like, "Where's the Cardi B CD?" Like no, that doesn't happen.
I'm sure if anything, they're buying it on iTunes or they're buying the vinyl on Amazon because they don't want anybody to know that they bought it.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Because everything is vinyl now. Everything is just trying to be popular again.
Now, how do you feel about that? Because I'm kind of torn because I like that some of the music that I listen to now is coming out on vinyl. Like they're issuing it out and they're pressing it on vinyl. So it's cool because I can support the band that way. I mean, I'll still stream it, but I'll also try to go buy the record.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you also get the Urban Outfitters people who are going and buying, like... I made this comparison to a friend of mine who's really into records also. Like the starter pack is like a Crosley turntable and an Arcade Fire record, and like like now they buy records, like now that's their thing, like they, and that's cool, you know.
I think it's more like Imagine Dragons.
Yeah, it's Imagine Dragons and like AWOL Nation, and like I support that, like that's cool if you're gonna go buy records. And I saw, you know, you want to enjoy your records, not the turntable, right? If you're buying the records because you want to enjoy them, part of it is also finding them, you know, naturally, like at a record store. I get that.
I don't know. It's probably just the cynic in me, but...
That's the only side of you, David. Like, there's no other...
I appreciate that everything's coming out. I appreciate that there's a resurgence of vinyl and everything's coming out on vinyl. And there's a lot of cool shit that I never was able to find original pressings of locally. I mean, you can find the stuff online, but yeah. I would rather pick it up. But yeah, I mean, it's just a crash. It's the same thing, just like everything else. They're just trying to feed into it because it's popular. Most of these reissues aren't done well.
No.
They're not, like, cleaned up at all. Like, I've got records that are repressings that are just sound awful. Because yeah. They're just trying to get money. They just want the money, so they're just putting it out as quickly and as cheaply as possible, and yeah.
A lot of those I've noticed that are like they're pressed off like the digital recording off of it,
yeah,
or the digital copy of it. So it's like just go buy the CD,
yeah,
or just put it on Spotify or Apple Music. It's gonna be the same thing. And then I got a reissue of a Wu-Tang 36 Chambers recently, and I was like, oh cool, I got a good deal on it, but it was a reissue. So I didn't mind paying the $20 or whatever it was for it. But the pressing is terrible. It's trash. And there's nothing special about the record itself. The sleeve is just like a regular inner sleeve. There's nothing special about it. So I was like, well, why did I pay $20 for it? And it's not like it's cheap either.
Yeah.
With the resurgence of the pressing of vinyl, everything's expensive now.
Yeah.
And then I also hate, I'm sure you've encountered this too. I go to Half Price Books and I go during the day when there's nobody there and there's three people there. And they're like, oh, my God, look at this record. My mom would totally love this. Like, it's like a, you know, like a Alabama record or something. They're like, oh, my God, like, look at this one. It's like, dude, get out of the way.
Yeah.
Like, I want to look through these.
This is so retro.
Yeah. It's like, oh, look at this John Cougar Mellencamp record.
Or even worse, you go and it's the older people. Oh, my God, I used to have this.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool. You can have it again. Get out of my way. Just
go to the Goodwill. You're going to find it there.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to put this on my wall.
Yeah, or they buy it to frame.
Yeah, I get that to them. That's fine, but just get out of the way. Like, get it. We don't need to have a conversation about it. Just pick it up and get out of the way. It's a dollar.
Yeah. Shit or get off the pot. It's a dollar. Mm-hmm.
What do you think? What's next? Like, it went from, you know, CDs and then the streaming and the pirating and now there's original vinyl. Like, what's next?
Cassettes.
You think so? I've seen that people have been putting cassettes, but they're not superior in any way.
No, they're really not. But I mean, people just want what's old is new, and it's because these people are young. They've never experienced it. They never had to deal with it. It's like that meme, handing somebody a cassette tape and a pencil and having them figure out what it's for.
Yeah,
what
the correlation to wind it back up.
These kids don't know that. So as soon as their cassette gets all unwound, they're gonna just
throw it away. Yeah.
So I don't know.
Do you remember? Okay, so needless to say, I was very poor growing up, as you can tell by my appearance now. And there was times where we couldn't buy tapes to record on, to make people mix tapes or record off the radio. So you just put a piece of tape over that little square on the top of the tape.
Yeah.
And then you could record over it.
Yeah.
And like when I found that out, I was like, this is genius because there's a bunch of tapes here that no one listens to. So now I'm going to record all over them.
Oh, yeah. It's the same tab, like records. The cassette tapes, when you'd buy the blank ones, there is that tab. Once you record it on it, you just break that tab off so you can't.
But all you got to do is put a piece of tape over it and you can still record on it.
You can still record your radio songs over the Wham cassette. It's all right.
Yeah. I would never record over that. No, I would take my parents' cassette tapes that they didn't listen to anymore. And I remember we were growing up and my mom having a lot of records. And I bet there were some gems in there. And I never paid attention to them. But I bet she had some awesome records because she listened to that, like, rock and roll, like 50s and 60s rock and roll.
Yeah.
And my dad, too, he was a big Beatles fan. So I'm sure he had some really good records there. And I don't know. I don't know what happened to them.
Well, and that's how I got into vinyl. My parents had a ton of great records when I was a kid, and that. So when, I don't know if it was the same for you guys. When I was a kid, preteen, you would get your first stereo so you could listen to your own music.
Right. Whatever. Yeah.
So when I got my record, I didn't get a new one from the store. My parents went and found some shit at a garage sale or a flea market, but it was a full stack. Had a turntable, had the receiver, had a cassette player, and I was happy. Yeah. I was happy as hell, because back then, I mean, I'm 13, 14 years old. You go to a flea market, get a fucking grip of records for 25 cents. Yep. So, I mean, I've been into it for a long time because my parents, I remember listening to Lowrider on vinyl, I don't know how many times, when I was like 12.
That's cool. Like, you're talking about Lowrider, the compilation,
yeah,
put out by, yeah, Lowrider magazine,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. With the homies toys on the front.
Those had some good songs on, like Lowrider oldies. Yeah, that's some great songs, yeah, dude.
I mean,
the you can oldies but goodies to, compilations.
Yeah.
Despacito, not Despacito, Suavecito.
You can only listen to Groovin' so many times.
I mean, I listened to it 3 times today, so.
So back to drumming for the Phantom.
Oh, right,
what,
right.
What were your influences in starting, or so you said you hadn't played drums before. I'm
never.
Sure you dicked around with it at the working in a music, yeah, store. I'm sure you got on the drums once or,
yeah,
twice.
I did, but again, I'm a metalhead at heart, so I would like try to blast beat, which of course I couldn't. But that was my only experience on the drums. I think maybe one of my cousins growing up had a drum set somewhere in his house at some point, but other than that was it. When I first heard of you guys and what kind of music y'all were gonna do, I asked you, like, give me a bunch of band names that I can listen to.
Well, yeah, and I remember burning you a bunch of CDs.
Yeah, so like Twang Marvels, I mean, and Ghastly Ones, and
listen to this one drum beat and you'll know everything.
Yeah, listen to, get this down.
Yeah.
No, but there's I think the Surfer Drummer, even though the beats are very similar, that they all of them have their own style. You know, the swing is different, the beat is different, even though it sounds repetitive. It's you can do a lot of interesting things with it, and that's what I liked about it. Like the Twang Marvels, they do some great stuff. The drummer is really great, and Messer Chups, am I, yeah, saying that right?
Mm-hmm.
They're great. I love them a lot too, and of course the Ghastly Ones. They're a little bit harder. I think they're like more rock and roll,
yeah,
than surf. But yeah.
Yeah, when we were in California, I got to meet Garrett, the guitar player from the Ghastly Ones.
That's cool.
It was fucking rad.
Well, they so cool. They were on Rob Zombie's label, right?
Yeah,
or he had a label or something?
In the mid-90s, yeah, he had Zombie Agogo Records, and their first record was put out on that. The Bomboras had a record.
Bombora, that's another, yeah, one too, yeah. He should bring that back and then sign us to it.
Well, I've thought with like the resurgence of vinyl and surf music, I would have thought he would have considered bringing it back. But
now, would this be like the third wave or fourth wave of surf, like there is with ska?
Currently, I mean, so there was first wave in the 60s. In the 80s, I guess there was second wave. The 90s, third. Maybe like, honestly, it's probably like fourth or fifth wave.
No, it doesn't sound that cool when it's fourth or fifth wave.
Yeah, no, it doesn't roll off the tongue. But
not like third wave.
Yeah, but it's all right.
Now,
we were able to get in on that fourth wave.
Right, yeah, I guess
right
so.
As it was,
right at the end of it.
Yeah, right as it was.
We were the ones that killed it.
Yeah, exactly.
What I know you've mentioned that you wanted to play guitar when you watched La Bamba. Is that an accurate story? Like, is that why you wanted to play guitar?
So yeah, I mean,
they showed it the other day. By the way, last Thursday at where did they show at the Slab Cinema?
Oh yeah, I saw somebody had posted that. I mean, yeah, when I was like 3 and 4 years old, that was that and Ninja Turtles were like the two things
I
would
play
watch.
Guitar?
My parents bought me a plastic toy guitar that I would like scream La Bamba at the top of my lungs, standing on the coffee table,
you know,
strumming that guitar.
That's bullshit because you make fun of people who scream out Richie at the end of,
no,
of the
would,
song.
No,
but I bet you used to do it too.
Nah.
You, come on, dude.
Nah.
You can't watch that movie and not do that.
Respect. Respect. Pour some of my shark's teeth out.
Esai Morales, if you're hearing this, yeah, you're the man.
Yeah. You're the real MVP.
You're the man. I love you, Bob.
And you're not my first or my last.
What about Bob? No one ever thinks about Bob.
No, yeah, nobody gives a shit about Bob.
I do.
But yes, that is an accurate story. That, well, I say that because that is what prompted me to pick up this toy guitar and start pretending like I was strumming. It wasn't until I was a teenager that I actually started playing. But yeah, I would attribute it all to La Bamba. That's what started it. That's what got me. That's what started my love of music. That and the Beatles. Because my mom was a huge Beatles fan.
Yeah. So. We always had music around the house too. I got, some of my uncles were musicians, and my dad was really into music. So I kind of tell my little brother all the time that he's lucky because he got the influences from my parents and my older siblings and myself. So he was able to take all that in. And I'm sure it's the same for everybody. I'm sure your parents had their style, which you obviously were inspired by. And then your older sister probably had some music that you listened to also. Maybe.
Yeah. You can only listen to so much 3T and New Kids on the Block.
I can honestly say I've never heard a New Kids on the Block song all the
You're
way through.
So full of, oh, okay.
I swear, I've never heard it all the way through.
All the way through. I thought you were going to say ever.
No, like, no, I might recognize one or two songs from them, but I've never... I mean, it was a little bit before my time, I think. But I've never heard one all the way through. And I mean, I don't think I would like it. We'll see. We'll find out.
I think you'd love
guess
it.
We'll never know.
I think you'll love it. At the break, when we go to refill, we'll play
some New Kids on the Block. Yeah. All right. Speaking of refill, what... like you said, it was a natural progression to get into the tiki drinks and the lifestyle, whatever. When do you remember the first time you drank on that you were like, I want to get into this. Like, this is good. This is the kind of drinking I want to do now. And now you're wearing a Hawaiian shirt, so you've gone like full blown.
Yeah.
Like tiki. Or tiki shirt. I'm sorry, not Hawaiian shirt. Tiki shirt.
Aloha shirt.
Aloha shirt. Okay. Aloha.
If you're gonna do something, do it all the way. If I was gonna play surf guitar, I was gonna play surf guitar, and I was gonna play surf guitar in a band. Cool. I don't like to do things half-ass, and it's cool. It's the sort of thing like I never would have imagined I was gonna be wearing Aloha shirts, but it's part of the feel.
I dig it.
It's all escapism. It's part of escaping, and that's why we go drinking at tiki bars. That's why we drink tiki drinks. That's the same for everybody.
Do you get like, you go to like a bar and it's like, if you're wearing an Aloha shirt, you get like 50% off this drink.
Yeah. People hook it up. Well, because you go to these places, like especially the ones in Vegas, you go to these places and maybe one other person other than the bartenders are wearing them. So you stick out. You're in a tiki bar. Yeah, it's a touristy thing. There's people there. And what's really funny is when we went to Chicago, they hooked us up with one of their group drinks because they recognized me. They saw us. The only dude in the bar wearing an Aloha shirt. They recognized me from the night before. They were super welcoming. Hey, welcome back. Thanks for coming back. When we found out our flight got canceled, Jen left. We had just gotten our drinks, and she went to go sort things out with the airline. When she was gone, the girl was like, oh, where'd she go? Because I saw her out of the corner of my eye come in with this smoking skull.
Oh.
I was like, that's fucking cool. What is that? And I'm like looking to see where she's going with it, like looking all around to see where that skull is gonna land. And she comes up to our table, and drops it down. I'm like, we didn't order this. She's like, no, but the host saw you, and we just want to say thanks for coming back. Right on. I was like, that's fucking rad.
See, that goes back to that lifestyle. It's just that's the way it is. There's, and like even when we went to Lalo to do a show, everybody was just so cool. Like everybody wanted to have a good time. And they wanted to make sure that you were having a good time. Yeah. It was like the Mexican mom of lifestyles.
Of bars, yeah.
Yeah, they wanted to take care of you. Like, they wanted to make sure you were drinking and make sure you were comfortable.
Make sure you were full.
Make sure you were full. If you're not, there's some frijoles in the refrigerator. That's beans, by the way.
This is a Texas Tiki podcast. We got Texans here. They're gonna understand. They'll know. Maybe I guess if there's people in other states.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know the demographic you have here, but frijoles means beans. But I was talking to my mom, speaking of my Mexican moms, and I was telling her that she always asks how the band's doing or whatever. Before she asks how my wife is doing, she'll ask how the band's doing. And so I tell her, we're not playing that much or whatever. We have some gigs coming up, but not too much. And she's like, I really like your music. It reminds me of when we were growing up, like that garage style rock and roll. And I always get the feeling like if it was not to say that we're making this music for money, because that's not why we do it. Yeah. We do it because it's fun and we love it. But if it was marketed correctly as part of a collective, like the tiki lifestyle, the rockabillys, the cars, the music, I think it would be really big, because it's like you said, the lifestyle is very welcoming. It's very inviting to everybody. It really is no, there's no race, there's no, you know, sex or whatever. It's just like, come hang out.
Yeah.
These drinks are good. Have a good time. That's why I've been into it. Especially since you're into it, and I know someone that knows their way around it. Because if I were to try to go to a bar, I wouldn't know what to order. But now I know to order a shark's tooth.
Well, and you know what? I'm going to be honest. Jen is the one with the palate for drinks. She's the one who always... I look at the name, I'm like, that sounds cool, so I'm going to drink it.
Yeah.
And it's not always that cool. But Jen, she'll look at the ingredients and be like, oh, that's got this and it's got that. I'm going to order one of those. And I'm there. I'm like, yeah, my drink's all right. And then I try hers. I'm like, that's oh, this is way fucking better. Super good. So I always...
Have y'all ever thought about doing like your own drink, like a hybrid?
Well, so that's what I'm working on
right now. There's so many options. I mean, there's so many ingredients that surely the options are endless.
Yeah. So that's the goal, is to create a signature drink for the show. So I'm working on that.
That's cool.
Gonna have a marooned drink, so yes. We're gonna be doing trials and taste testing, so I'll let you know.
All right, I will volunteer for that.
Yeah, so going to Lalo, was that your first tiki bar experience?
The real tiki bar, yes. I've been to places that have quote unquote tiki drinks, but they're usually like very sugary, like a piña colada, like in a fancy cup with like an umbrella in it, which were good. I mean, I didn't have a complaint about them. But that was my experience as far as tiki drinks. And when I listened to the first episode of your podcast, the first few of them, I was really surprised how much really is out there as far as tikis, like mm-hmm. tiki drinks. And these people take it very serious. Like I think it was the guys from Lalo that were talking about the books that they've read. And just the mention of the book, and they were like, oh, yeah. It was almost like, oh, yeah, on page 32. Yeah, they took, and I was like, dude, that's intense, because it's just a drink. But when it's done right, it's really more than that. It's a whole night. Like, it changes the feeling of a night or anything, really. And, yeah, I was very impressed with how much there really is out there. And then you combine the Aloha shirts and the music, and it's like a whole different world.
Well... Speaking of changing the vibe of the night, let's make another drink and we'll be right back.
Yes.
This episode is sponsored by Bamboo on the Bayou. Bamboo on the Bayou is a week-long tiki crawl in Houston, Texas, the week of November 5th through the 10th. This week of tiki is capped off with a tiki event at Mid-Main in Houston on November 11th. Bamboo on the Bayou will feature vendors such as sponsors of the podcast Rat Rods and Pinups and Aloha Texas Tiki Company, along with the Boozy Doodler, Big T Carves, and more. There will also be live music provided by King Pelican, the Will Van Horn Trio, and my band, the Phantomatics. We'll even be recording an episode of Marooned out there, so be sure to stop by and say aloha November 11th at Bamboo on the Bayou in Houston, Texas.
I don't know why you'd start sneezing like that now. We're going?
Hmm?
We're going?
Yeah.
All right. So tell me about this drink before I taste it.
That is a three dots and a dash. Mm-hmm. That is, it was a Don the Beachcomber original, around World War II, with Morse code. Three dots and a dash is Morse code for victory. Oh. V for victory. So yeah, it's just, it's lime juice, orange juice, honey syrup, instead of like sugar syrup, velvet falernum, allspice dram, which is very, very, you'll taste it. That'll probably be like the first thing you taste. Then just two different rums and some bitters.
What are these? Are these cherries on those the toothpick here?
Cherries, yes.
Oh, okay. I like this toothpick too.
Yeah, those are dope.
All right, let's give it a shot.
I got a bunch of those from Three Dots in Chicago. I found the company that makes them. I'm going to order some.
Ooh, dude, that's a really good drink. This feels like a holiday drink.
So that's why I said it's the allspice. Mm-hmm. You'll definitely get that at the forefront. It's kind of pumpkin-y, wintry tasting.
Yeah, it's got like there's this, yeah, you can taste, I don't know if there's cinnamon in it, but yes. It kind of tastes like it.
Yeah.
There's this drink that we used to have in the holidays called Calientito. I don't know if there's an English translation for that, but it was like different fruits just soaked in this, I guess, rum. Some people make it with tequila, but it's just soaked in this rum, and then it's warm. This is kind of what it, this reminds me of. It's pretty nice. Good. You mentioned Beachcomber. That's one of the books that those Lalo guys were talking about. Did he put out several books of like mixed drinks?
Beach Bum Berry is the guy who did the books. Mm-hmm. Don the Beachcomber was the guy who kind of started the tiki movement in the 30s. He started all these drinks. He invented this one. He invented, what else did he make? I mean, he made a shit ton of drinks. Most of the drinks you'll see on menus are referenced as Don the Beachcomber drinks. But yeah, that's one of my favorites.
What's some of the etiquette? If you go to a tiki bar, like if you go to Lalo and you ask for a drink, is it like unheard of that you make like special requests, like a substitution? Like instead of this, can you put this? Is that like something you don't do, is like a no-no?
No, not at all. So one of the last times we had gone to Lalo, they make the painkiller, they add bitters to theirs, so it's a little different. But I had been thinking of trying it with this pineapple rum that Plantation makes. It's super good. And I was like, the rum on its own is incredible tasting. And there's pineapple, orange juice, coconut cream, and rum in the painkiller. And I was like, I wonder how this this pineapple rum would taste in it. And I hadn't tried it yet. I mean, I've got it myself, but I hadn't tried it because I was like, that's probably redundant, and it probably just makes it too overpowering with the pineapple. But no, it like sits in the drink perfectly. It's awesome. So yeah, that's the first place that I was like, I'll try it here. And they made it for me. So yeah, I mean, if that's the thing is drinks, the tiki drinks, there's so many ingredients in these. Like this drink alone, there's like 7 ingredients in there. And they're all balanced. So, I mean, yeah, you can ask for a substitute, but it might throw the whole drink off.
Right. They know what they're doing.
Well, and yeah, you're following the recipe. So like those are the two rums. I use the Demerara rum, 1/2 ounce of that and ounce and a half of the Clément Vsop Martinique rum, which that's the basic formula. It's Martinique and Demerara rum. So you can...
Demerara rum. Yeah. How what was that?
Demerara rum.
Demerara rum.
Demerara.
Demerara rum. Yeah. All right. I mean, I'm going to support that just because I like saying that.
So yeah, I mean, that's the base of that drink. So I mean, you can, like I said, you can ask for a substitute, but it may completely throw the whole drink off. You're not going to say, give me a 3 dots and a dash with Karuba, because that's a completely different rum.
All right.
It's not going to taste.
I mean, also, if you're like me who's not very experienced with this, you're probably not going to ask for like a particular rum unless you know what you're talking about. Like, yeah. you're not going to get just like some Sally off the street that's like put in Bacardi in it, right?
Yeah.
Now, and these two drinks that you just made me, I've noticed that the rum, it's not like the typical rum that I drink normally. It's like very mild and kind of, I don't want to use the word smoky because I know people probably overuse that, but that's kind of how the flavor palette is. It's kind of mild. It's not overpowering. Like it doesn't kick you in the face when you drink it. Is that something that's typical of these drinks? Like what makes it a good rum for a tiki drink? Do you know?
I mean, it just depends on the type of rum and how it mixes. I mean, those two rums, so that El Dorado 12, that one it's not a super high-end rum, but it is considered a nicer rum. So a lot of people wouldn't mix with it. I just like the way it tastes in this drink, so that's why I got it. But as far as, like, what to mix, it just depends on... It's all experimentation.
Right.
It's like any drink. You just try them out, see what tastes good. But these are, on their own, they are bold tasting. Maybe not the Martinique, but the El Dorado definitely.
I guess it goes back to what you were saying about the balance of the drink, because maybe they on their own they're probably very bold, but mixed with these other ingredients, they kind of fit into a place where it's very drinkable.
Yeah, and that's why you don't taste them like right off the bat.
There was an episode, I think, going back to the Lalo guys, I think they were the ones that mentioned that there's some like cringy moments when people will go into their bar and ask for like something like real generic, and they'll make it, right? But Do you have you come across that, like something a girl cringy where it's like, oh dude, like I know naturally we don't want to be snobs about it, but going back to the whole records thing where it's like, dude, just get out of my way, I'm trying to look at these records. Is there certain things where you're like, dude, like just let them do what they know how to do?
Well, there was one time we were at Lalo and this girl, some party girl in like a skin tight dress and 6-inch heels, goes up to the bar and says, "Do you have any drinks with vodka?" And the dude's like, "Did you walk in through the front door where it says rum bar?" Like, no. And then, of course, there's Tiki Tea in California, which has a drink called the Tropical Itch, I believe, which is like a Mai Tai with tequila. Mm. And that's kind of cringy. But, that bar keeps tequila in-house, so whatever. We'll do it. And then, of course, the Mai Tai story from Vegas at Golden Tiki of the girl sending her drink back saying, "This isn't a Mai Tai."
She's telling the Tiki Bar bartender, who probably knows these mixes very well, that what she got was not a Mai Tai.
Well, and that's what was hilarious, because she's like, "What's in this? This isn't a Mai Tai." And he's like, "Well, it's Jamaican rum, Martinique rum, lime, orgeat, simple syrup." Like, listed the 5 ingredients to make it. And she's like, "Well, I don't know what kind of Mai Tai you think this is, but I'm from Florida, and this is not a Mai Tai."
So she's like Applebee's Mai Tai. Like, she's drinking, like,
yeah,
2 for $20 at Chili's.
Yeah, exactly. And it was hilarious because he had just finished telling us about how he's from Florida, and he's like, "Oh, cool, so am I."
Oh, shit.
And, yeah, so she looked like a dickhead. But, yeah, I mean, it takes all sorts of people. I mean, I'm sure people ask for Bacardi drinks and rum and cokes all the time. Like, I mean, they'll make it, but you know, we have a lot of other really cool stuff.
Why would you go there otherwise? Like, you go there, maybe if you walk in there by accident.
Or if you go with a group, some people in your group want to go. I don't know.
I guess you're right.
Any number of reasons why people would go to it.
Me personally, when we went with y'all, I knew that they were going to have a variety of drinks, most of which I've never had before. So naturally, I was going to want to try these. But even in my imagination, as a person who isn't open to trying new drinks, there's probably at least one thing on there that you might recognize, even by accident.
Yeah.
So, like, even if you walked in there and didn't know anything about them, the best thing to do is to ask the bartender, "Well, these are the kind of drinks that I normally drink." And with such a variety of ingredients in all these drinks, surely they can make something that's gonna,
taste
gonna good. That's gonna, you're right. So the whole idea of like going in there and demanding to know what ingredients he put in because he did it wrong, it's kind of asinine to me. Well, I'm sure any kind of bar, I'm sure there's a lot of places that are like tequila bars that you go in there and ask for like, "Oh, well, do you have Patron?" It's like, "Well, we do, but
why would you
like
want
there's
that when
stuff
we
that's better?"
Yeah, well, we've got some really cool shit that I never tried before. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. People are strange. But I like we were talking about in the episode with Nick, I think people just tend to get scared off of rum. Maybe because of bad experiences, maybe because they've never tried it before. I think also if you hand somebody a dark drink or put a bottle of dark rum in front of them, I think they're going to be a little more apprehensive to that versus a clear tequila.
I'm the opposite.
Yeah, no, and as you should be.
Yeah.
You're a normal person. I think.
I'm the opposite with, like, vodka drinks. I'm like, no. Like,
yeah,
don't
exactly.
Put that anywhere near me.
Yeah. Like a reasonable person.
Yeah. Well, rum, even if you don't know anything about, or if you're not that experienced with it, rum just naturally tastes better. Like, it actually has a flavor. Where vodka and tequila have one purpose, and that's it.
Yeah.
And, like, rum mixes so much better than any of the other ones, I think, anyway.
But like you said, it's about finding something that's familiar, and I think that may be why you tried. Well, you had tried a painkiller before we went to Don the Beachcomber, but I mean, if you look at the ingredient list, other than adding orange juice to it, it's a piña colada. You just add orange juice, then it's a painkiller. So I mean, it's finding something that's familiar. Like if you were to look at it and see that, oh, it's got pineapple juice, coconut cream, and rum, that's a piña colada. Add the orange juice in there, it's a painkiller. So it's about finding that happy medium. And I mean, sometimes you try something that's completely off the wall that you wouldn't normally try, and it's awesome. Like Lalo has the fire in the cane field, which is a mezcal and rum. I wouldn't have normally tried that because I don't normally drink mezcal. But I tried it and it was really, really good.
Yeah, mezcal is great. I like mezcal a lot.
Yeah.
Never thought of mixing it with rum, but...
Well, and that's David, the bartender from Lalo. He's like, I was determined to make it work. He's like, for all intents and purposes, it really shouldn't. He's like, but I was determined to make those two work together, so...
Is there a trend now, like, where everything seems to have... There's two trends now. Everything has pumpkin in it, or everything has some kind of pepper in it. Like, there's, like, habanero beer. Is there such a trend with the tiki drinks also? Because I don't think... Personally, I don't think I'd want that. I don't want a heat in this drink, because the sweetness is where it's at.
If there is, I haven't seen it, but warm tiki drinks exist. Hot buttered rums.
See, that sounds delicious.
Yeah. The one at Lalo is super good as well, because they have this thing called tiki butter, which I don't know exactly what's in it, but I know the base of it is melted vanilla ice cream.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It sounded like a sex thing to me at first, like tiki butter, but now that you explain it, yeah, it makes a lot more sense.
Could be a sex thing.
It could be a sex thing. I mean, maybe we could do an episode of that and just like turn off the microphones.
What microphones? These aren't hooked up.
By the way. Okay, yeah. I was wondering why there's no cables going to it. Now, what's the rule here on the cherries? Like, can I eat these?
Yes. You better eat them.
All right, let me see.
They are fancy cherries.
Mm. Is there a lot more bitter than regular cherries?
They're Luxardos. They're like the whatever they put them in is a lot richer. I mean, you also notice they're not like bright red like your typical cocktail cherries. But yes, they are super good.
Very good.
I would be offended if you didn't eat it as well.
Yeah, they're probably like $12 a cherry.
Close.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're a little more.
What was this drink called again?
That is a three dots and a
three
dash.
Three dots and a dash. V now for victory.
Now it's just one dot because you ate two of the cherries.
Oh, was I not supposed to eat them?
No, I'm just kidding.
I like that. That's cool. What else?
I don't know. What else you got for me?
Well, tell me about your mother.
Where to start?
How does that make you feel?
My mother is a wonderful lady.
She is. She really is.
Dorothy Mantooth is a saint, Joe. Yeah, we can taste some rums.
Yeah, let's do that.
When we finish.
I got a designated driver, so we're good. Right? If not, we'll call an Uber.
You'll probably have to wait like 45 minutes for one to get out here. But that. No, they're actually... I've just... mapped things just to see how much it would be, and yeah, there are usually a few floating around out here.
22 to 30 bucks. Screw that.
That's what we do when we go to Lalo now, because the parking's so awful.
Yeah, the parking lot's really small.
We'll catch an Uber and have them just drop us off at the door, so we don't have to worry about parking. We don't have to worry about driving.
Do you think this like tiki drink, if it does catch some kind of momentum, do you think eventually it'll go the way of all these other trends where people are going to overdo it, and it's going to be harder and harder to get to the hole-in-the-wall places that actually do it right, just like with everything else?
I think it's already at that point. It's like hit a huge, huge thing right now. I mean, somebody posted on one of the Facebook groups or on the Tiki subreddit that like... what is it? Olive Garden has a Milan Mai Tai now. Like, come on. Once you get to that point, it's jumped the shark. But at the same time, the places that are doing it right and doing it well, hopefully will persevere and continue after the fad dies down. Because it is a pretty huge fad right now. Like, it's every time we've been to Lalo in the past few months, it's just... swamped.
I mean, I'm glad for them because maybe they can expand and open up a San Antonio location. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that's what they may have mentioned something about that. I don't know where they're at with it, but yeah. So we're doing Bamboo on the Bayou in Houston in November as well. What are y'all's plans? You're just gonna go up Saturday?
Yeah, well, I work Friday, so to go up there Saturday, stay the weekend. It's a car show also, right?
No
it's just car show, music.
Just, just music and vendors. But
that's cool.
It should still be a good time. It was a blast when we went last year, but I think they toned it down a little bit. It's last year they had like they had three stages because it was at Continental, so they had bands playing outside, playing at Big Top Charlie's next door. I don't remember if there's anybody playing at.
Well, we did a show there that was like that.
Yeah.
At Continental, where it was like there was a band on every stage throughout the whole day.
Yeah, exactly. But yes, this is just it's just three bands now, and it's at a different spot, so should be cool. Like I said, they got some cool sponsors coming. They got us, King Pelican, and then another band. I don't know who else is playing, but yeah, should be fun. Then I'm gonna be recording an episode of the podcast out there as well. So, looking forward to it. A lot of cool vendors. But yeah, gonna be a blast.
And it's in Texas, so the weather will be nice in November still. Probably like 85 degrees.
Yeah, still be hot as shit. Hopefully not humid. Hopefully they can get rid of most of that water.
Do you remember the show we did in Victoria where I almost died?
Yes. Where you almost fell off the back of that flatbed. Almost,
dude. I thought I really... Okay, so like halfway through the set, I was like, this is how I'm going to die. But I was like... I was like, you know what? At least I'm doing what I love doing. So I was ready. I was ready to meet my Lord, my Dark Lord.
Yeah, no,
I remember getting off the stage and just like laying in the grass like... I can't believe I made it through that set. This is unbearable.
I remember going to the car because I was wearing jeans. I remember going to the car and just taking my pants off for a minute because it was so fucking hot. Like I was sitting in the driver's seat, like, in my underwear. Just, like I had to cool off somehow.
How did you get your pants off, dude? They're probably like stuck on you.
I cut them off.
That's what you always carry scissors with you.
It's like Kramer when he's wearing his dungarees.
Yeah, yeah. You're walking around like Frankenstein.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, it was so hot.
Yeah,
that was obnoxious. I remember, like, my shirt was soaked.
Because it had just rained.
It was, like, super hot. Water. And so my shirt was soaked, and I was like, I got to take this shirt off. Like, this is
gotta pop terrible. This off.
Yeah. So we had, like, a Fantomatic shirt that was, like, a medium. So I threw that medium shirt on, dude. It was so uncomfortable, but man, at least I didn't take my pants off.
Dude, I had to do something.
Y'all had a hotel right down the street. We drove back to San Antonio.
Yeah, we decided to stay.
And thanks, for some reason, we're like, let's go to Dairy Queen. So we like ate Dairy Queen right after the show.
And you felt terrible.
I still feel terrible. That was like 3 years ago. That was a good time though.
So, what do you think is your favorite Fantomatics gig ever?
Oh man, there's been some good ones that I was like the one in San Marcos that we did for Jeremy's bike thing.
Oh, the bike prom
crowd was just so good. I've also really really enjoyed the zombie prom we did at 502, just because it was different. Everybody was zombied out.
Oh, and then we did some oldies. Two sets?
Yeah, we did some oldies and people were dancing. That was a great night. Even though this set might not have been our best, but the night we opened up for Dig Dale.
Yeah.
Like how many San Antonio bands can say that they opened up for Dig Dale. Like,
us and King Pelican, that's literally
King Pelican's on a whole different level. Those guys are so good.
Yeah.
I think that one just because it was Dig Dale. Like we opened up for, and then we played Rumble.
And then
we played Rumble, and then they played Rumble. I was like, dude, I wanted to go up to him and be like, dude, really? Like you couldn't play that, you know, the next night. you had to play that also.
Had to be a one-upper.
Dick. Yeah, yeah, he had to one-up me, you dick. You Dig Dale. But yeah, that was once in a lifetime, I think.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about the Vegas show. That's going to be pretty great. No? It's not going to be great?
I mean, if it happens, that'd be great. I don't know. At this point, I don't know. We'll have to see. But yeah, no, that would be amazing. Even if that doesn't happen, we should still just go out to Vegas and book a few shows. That would still just be a blast. And then we can party and play and have a good time.
I don't party anymore.
You don't party?
No, I don't even
drink.
You're
Mormon now?
Yeah. What? I think I like this Three Dots and a Dash more than that Shark's Tooth.
Shark's Tooth was good, but like I said, that pineapple was a little overbearing.
This one's just, I know, it's like really chill, a little mellow. Good flavor. The cherries are good.
Cool. Try the painkiller.
All right. Let's try the painkiller. Painkiller's good. This has a lot more flavor. But yeah, the three dots in the dash still, I think, is my favorite so far. What else you got for me? There's only two drinks.
I don't know. We'll make a third.
Let's do some rum.
Since somebody suggested rum tasting.
Yeah,
in the
I'm down for that.
We'll get to it in due time. Still, like I said, the night is still young.
I said I was born in Mexico, raised in Texas, so I can drink just fine. I can also eat a lot of frijoles, as we talked about earlier.
Those are beans.
Those are beans, by the way.
So, I don't know. What I'm trying to figure out how to pose this question to you.
You know how I feel about my mother?
No. Oh. I know how you feel. I know how I feel about your mother.
Hi, Mom.
Hola.
Hola. ¿Cómo estás?
I don't know. Like, did you... Obviously, I know for a fact, without a doubt, you never anticipated playing in a surf band.
Right.
But what, like... I don't know. How do you... Do you still enjoy it? I mean, it's been almost 10 years. Like,
no, yeah. I enjoy it mostly because I love playing with you guys. Like, it's fun. Even... Mama Cela. Even when... When we were doing three shows a month or four shows a month or whatever, and it was kind of stressful because we do have full-time jobs, like you've mentioned before, and we have other lives, that's been my escape. And even practicing, I'll practice for like an hour a day sometimes. And it's just fun. It's still fun to me, and when it stops being fun, I'll stop doing it. And as far as like being in a surf band specifically, no, I didn't ever think that I'd be in a surf band. But once I heard the music and really got to know it, I have an appreciation for it, not only as a genre of music and all the different influences that it's brought on, but the fact that it takes a lot of talent as far as the guitar players go. Like, the musicianship of the guitar player is on another level as far as surf guitar goes, I think.
I think that's what our band is missing.
No, dude. Honestly, I've had people who go watch us and they're like, dude, your guitar player is amazing. I'm like, is he?
No.
I'm like, well, he's good looking and all, but I don't... but is he? No, but it is. And I think because I've played with you guys for 10 years already, that sometimes I take it for granted. But I'll rewatch videos of people that, you know, that post up our videos online, or I'll listen to our record, which... isn't the best, but it is impressive. It does take a technique that is unlike any other genre, I think. I've also got into this whole black metal surf thing, which I don't know if you've seen.
I think I've seen
one of those videos. Dude, it's so cool, because it really is. Like, if you take the distortion away from black metal, it's surf music.
Yeah.
So, like, there's these surf bands that cover black metal albums, like, song by song. And it's got, like, that lo-fi... like recorded in a tin can kind of feel to it, but it's black metal, and it's like, dude, this is so cool. So it's like a combination of two things that I love, because I'm true cult black metal and the surf music, which is very similar guitar playing. I'm sure I just offended a bunch of surf guitarists right now, but
no, the devil picking, tremolo picking, all that stuff, yeah, it's, if you put distortion on it. And that's funny, because I've seen, not black metal, but I have seen videos of dudes covering metal songs, like fast metal guitar playing, and they just put a reverb on it, and yeah, it's a surf song.
Yeah, like there's this album called Transylvanian Hunger. I can't remember who, I think it's Dark Throne. I can't remember right now. I just offended all the black metal fans too. But this surf band covered it completely, and it's like called like California Hunger or something. And it's like, well, this is like super cool, but it's like a SoundCloud thing, so you can't stream it, you can't download it. You can put it on YouTube, or you can listen to it on SoundCloud. I'm like, man, this is super cool. So it kind of combined both genres that I really enjoy. So we should do that. We should do like a I don't know, like an alt country surf surf group, or like a trap surf, and get like some auto-tuned vocals and shit.
Yeah. Just cover Mike Jones's entire catalog.
Yeah, yeah, like the old, like the chopped and screwed versions. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Obviously.
Chopped and screwed surf.
What do you think of all these like genre mismatches? Because there's some that I'm like, really? Like, don't do that. Like, that's stupid. Like, I saw one that's like crunkcore. It's like hardcore, like scene kids, like Hot Topic employees with like Little John crunk style music. It's fucking trash.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've seen like people dress like that.
I just
like,
offended all the like, crunkcore kids too. Like, there's nobody like left listening.
The, like all the Hot Topic kids with grills.
Like. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're like talking about like their cars and shit. It's like, you don't have a car. You have a fucking Tempo.
You're a Nissan Elantra.
You have a Taurus. Like, yeah. Relax. And there's like a pirate metal, which I can't get into. That's
pretty rattle. Yeah. Have to check that out.
Don't do it.
But no, like you were saying, we've played together for so long that it's you've built that feel, and that's one thing that Jen always asks. She's like, "How do they follow you? They never like she's seen us for 6 years now, and she's like, there's songs where you're just playing and they're just following, and they'll know." Or like playing Rumble.
Well, and one thing, another problem with that is because I've said it a million times, is I play drums, but I'm not a drummer. I don't have that internal metronome that drummers do. And a lot of things, like drummers typically are very anal about their setups. Like this tom has to be exactly like this, or these drumsticks have to be exactly balanced.
Well,
and I'm not like that at all. Like I'll play with two twigs. I'll play with a screwdriver and an ice pick. I don't care. So because I don't have that drummer mentality, it's easier for me and for the band as a collective to let you do your thing. Because sometimes you feel it and you feel it hot and you're playing heavy and faster. And judging by the crowd, maybe you'll slow this one down. Maybe you'll speed this one up. So it's easier for me to follow your vibe and Gareth follow us, rather than me set the tone and the tempo for it, and then you play along with it. And it's also a lot more fun that way, because no set's ever been the same.
Yeah, it really hasn't.
We've never played the song the same twice, which is, to me, that's what makes it a lot of fun, too. And I notice it, but I have to remember that other than the two girls here at this table, nobody else notices it. Like, they're just listening to the music, enjoying the music, hopefully. And they don't know that we played this one faster, or that we totally skipped this one part of the song and like went into something else, or that even though we've been doing it 10 years, we still look at each other like, what song do we play next? Like, even though we've been playing the same set for, you know, some years now. But when it comes, like right before we start playing and we do that first count, and it's like a whole new show. It's a whole new set, even though the songs are the same.
Well, and for me, like, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but
I hate it. Whatever it is you're gonna say is stupid.
Well, it was gonna be your drum playing, but that is actually what agreed. I'm gonna say. No, like being there, like we've played these songs for 10 years, but the first when I hear you doing the intro to Her Surfing, every time I'm like, God, it just like pumps me up.
Yeah,
it
yeah,
gets
yeah.
me ready to play, and it's yeah, dude, it's so rad. I love playing in a surf band.
And like, the inclusion of the new songs that we've been playing too. I guess because we have been playing the same songs for so long that the new songs feel like a new life to the set, and they're fun to play, and sometimes they're a little difficult because I think the last two shows we did with Gareth first came back, and these were songs that he had never played with us before.
Yeah.
So we're like, see how this goes. No one's going to know, but we know.
Yeah.
If the song's right or not. And even in the practices, we're like, man, that one was really great. That one was a little shaky, but once we're on and the lights come on, I think we've always been fine.
Yeah,
there's been some fuck ups, but it's all right.
Yeah, it's a blast even after all these years. I mean, that just blows my mind, the fact that I was like 22 when I decided to start this band.
I remember after
not that we're super old now, but it's been
I feel super old now that you say it like that. 10 years of my life have been committed to this. But I remember when the idea of me starting to play drums for y'all first came about, we went to go see a band at, like, I think it was, at the time it was called like Avenue B or something. I think it's like, I don't know what it's called now. I think it's like 1011 or one of those bars there by the river. And we went to go see this band there. It was like a surf band. And there was more emphasis on the guitar player. Like, the guitar player was carrying the band and the drummer was just the metronome. And I was like, shit, I could do that. I was like, that's easy. I could do that. And then we actually got to it, and I was like, oh, fuck. Like, it's not that easy. But even just like we've never played the song the same twice, I've never set up my drums the same. I'm always changing it, depending on the venue, depending on what I feel like putting in the truck that night. Sometimes I'm like, I don't want to take this big-ass bass drum. I'll take this little bass drum. It's never been the same. And I think that's a dynamic that we have as a band, because your setup's pretty much the same. I mean, you've played the same two guitars the entire time. Rest in peace, the other one.
Yep.
So we've always had the, or you guys have always had this, a similar setup the entire time, and I don't think I've ever set up the same way twice. So that's just another non-drummer thing of my style of playing.
But I think that's what works for us, is the fact that you're not, like, you're not somebody who started playing drums when you were 11 years old and you've been playing for 20 years now. Right. I think that, and that helped develop our style. Like you said, we do a lot of visual cues. I mean, we even talked about that back in the day. We're like, oh, how do we know when to end this?
Yeah,
song?
Just tell me.
I'll just look at you.
Yeah, like, just nod.
Like,
yeah, right,
we're gonna end it. But that's part of what makes it fun. Like you said, yeah. we never play the same song twice. Fuck, Rumble is 3-4 chords max. We've never played that song the same twice.
And there was a while that we were doing Death Waltz, and you would extend that solo for as long as you wanted. Like, if it was a good night and the crowd was going, I would just sit there and watch you, and then when you were ready to go back into the ending of it, I would just kind of look at you, and then I would look at Gareth, and it's like, okay, let's end this.
Gareth wasn't there.
He was in the crowd. Sometimes it's just like, all right, let's just do it real quick, you know.
Yeah.
Two or three bars, and then let's go back to the song.
Yeah, there's those nights where it's like, all right, come on. We just need to, shit, it's only been 30 minutes. We need to,
drag it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's a good time. Like, 30 to 45 minutes is a perfect set list for us.
Yeah.
Because there's been times where I go to check out these other surf bands, and they go on for like an hour and 20 minutes. Hour and a half.
All right, we'll be back for our next
set. Yeah, another set. And as much as I like, enjoy the music, and I love live music. Music is my religion. Live music is my church. But after an hour, I'm like, okay, dude, well, change it up. Let's listen to something else, or, you know, another band that's going to come in. It's going to sound completely different. Especially, like, if they're playing after us or before us, because I think we sound different. Not necessarily better than anybody, just different.
Well, and I think a lot of the surf bands are a little more traditional than we are.
Right.
We're certainly a little more rock and roll than... I mean, we do... Obviously, all the music is surf music, but we're a little more garagey rock and roll than a lot of the other surf bands that are around right now. So I think it's always been a cool contrast playing with these guys who are super traditional and super clean-sounding guitars and sound like all the first wave.
And that's another great thing about surf, is everybody's got great tone for the most part. You know, a lot of the bands we go and see, a lot of bands that are friends of ours, they have great tone. This is a genre of music that doesn't mess around. Yeah, there's one or two bands that it's like, well, are you surf or are you something else? Which is fine. But then they get categorized in that genre of surf, and it's like, well, more power to you, but that's not really surf music.
Yeah.
That's something else completely. And... 10 years I've been playing with y'all, and the fact that your amp is so fucking loud still sets us apart too. Like, every time you're so loud, and that's kind of become like your signature. Like, I love it when sound guys are like, can you turn it down? And you're like, no, like, I can't.
Or instead I turn it up.
Or they're like, we're gonna mic your amp, and I'm like, don't mic his amp. Like, you don't need to. Like, whenever I try to get there early, because my drums take longer to set up than you guys. So, like, how many mics do you need? And I was like, bass, drum, snare, one vocal. Nothing for the guitar? I was like, no, don't mic the amp. Like, it doesn't matter where we're playing. Like, you could play playing Budokan. Like, don't mic the amp. Like, you're going to be fine.
When is the Fantomatics live at Budokan?
It's live at the Royal Albert Hall. Adele opened up for us that night. She did pretty good.
Towards the end there.
Towards the end, they were just yelling our names, so she had to get off. She's a sweet girl, though.
She did sweet kid.
She's a sweet kid.
She's
going
someday.
Places. Yeah, she's going places. I think 27 is going to be really good.
I'm waiting for 46.
46 is going to be good, yeah.
That's the one that's good. She's just going to take off.
Yeah. She finally found her sound. Yeah, it's like one of the treats every time we play a show when they try to mic your amp. Like, oh, God, you're going to regret that.
You're just going to turn it off halfway.
Yeah, yeah. We've had some shows where I literally can't hear anything. Like, I can't hear my drums. I can barely hear Gareth. and I'm solely going on muscle memory and like watching you. Because I can't hear anything. Not because your amp's too loud, but because the way like maybe the stage is set up weird, or the sound guy didn't know what he was doing, and I had like no monitors.
Or you're playing at Corova.
And the echo is like super gnarly in there, which I love playing there because the stage setup is cool. But
the stage setup is cool, but I think
everything gets washed out.
I think that last time we played there, when we did that burlesque show where we played
on the back
after they closed,
yeah.
I think that was, dude, it sounded super cool back there.
Yeah,
like the reverb and everything just sounded so huge. But playing downstairs is the best.
In the basement, yeah.
Because the ceilings are like 6 feet tall, so everybody just scrunched in there, and it's like the old school punk shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's always been a blast.
Well, that's how that show at the, I think it was Avenue B again, when we opened up for the Coat Hangers.
Oh, dude, that show was a blast, too.
That show was cool. And
they're pretty big now.
Yeah, they were pretty big back then when we played with them. They were playing South by Southwest.
Yeah.
But I remember that show. I was super excited to play, and the girls were there watching us. The Coat Hangers were, and like halfway through the first song, my ride cymbal stand decided to take a shit and like tipped over, and like fell right onto my drums. And like somebody came and like picked it back up. I was like, oh god, I just fucked up. It's like 30 seconds into this first song, but the rest of the set went great. Or do you remember the time I hit you with a drumstick by accident?
You threw a drumstick at me.
It was an accident.
One of those times that you thought I was too loud. It's
like, turn it down, dude.
I just felt the drumstick hit me in the back. Just had to roll with it.
I was very impressed because I launched the drumstick. I saw it fly. I saw it hit your back. It hit you right in the back. But like on my way down with my hand from launching it, I grabbed another drumstick out of my pocket and I didn't miss a beat. I was like, nobody saw that. Everybody just saw David getting pelted with a drumstick, but nobody saw that amazing recovery I just did.
And
we'll never know.
Oh my gosh.
So rum tasting or?
Yeah, fuck it. Let's do this. So yeah, I mean, that's all I got. You got anything else to add, Joe? What do you got going on?
Well, as a self-proclaimed tiki virgin, I gotta say I'm very impressed with these two drinks. I'm looking forward to trying more. I've liked everything about this lifestyle so far, so I imagine I'm gonna enjoy this also. Thank you, David, for having me here.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
I trust your taste in music as much as I do drink, so I knew I was gonna enjoy these. And I'm looking forward to all the shows we have coming up and all the bars we're going to go to. And here's to another 10 years.
Yeah, we're gonna party hard in Houston. But yeah, on that note, thank you guys for joining us for another episode of Marooned, Texas Tiki Podcast. If you want to follow the show, you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/maroonedpodcast. You can follow me on Instagram at davidphantomatic. You can follow Joe at J Ortiz S A. Come check us out at Bamboo on the Bayou. We'll be talking about it a little bit more on the coming episodes as well.
Also the Phantomatics Instagram.
Yeah, check us out, the Phantomatics on Instagram. Follow us on Facebook.com/TheFantomatics. Check out our record on Spotify, Apple Music, all major streaming devices. Come check us out. We're playing Bamboo on the Bayou. So until next time, Akole Maluna, y'all.